Jeff Passan, first things first, how's your eye doing, man? How's the whole, corneal abrasion situation?
I'll tell you, it feels fine. It was gone like 24 hours later. But there is lasting damage.
Oh, no.
And the lasting damage comes from you posting the screenshot of our little chat there. My friends from college have worn me out so bad on the shape of the bandage on my eye and what it looked like. You know, I said originally, do you want to see something? And I should have known. My vision, both realistically and metaphorically, was very clouded that day. And I was neither able to look ahead in truth or strategically, and I will be wearing it like I did that eye patch for years to come now.
Yeah, Jeff, I appreciate you letting us exploit your pain and genuine medical malady for content here, which brings me to a follow-up question. How has your other eye reacted to what has been unbelievable excitement and stress as you watched how this regular season in Major League Baseball has finally come to something resembling resolution?
Yeah, it's been a little twitchy. And listen, the days leading up to Sunday were teeming with excitement. And the fact that we ended up with a game 162 that had six games with genuine implications on a potential game 163 was a gift from the baseball gods.
After a truly eye-popping baseball weekend, this playoff field is finally in focus. We have been gifted two single elimination wildcard games, the Yankees and the Red Sox tonight, and the Dodgers and the Cardinals tomorrow, with nothing short of their entire years on the line. So today, Jeff Passan opens his third eye and tells us the real reason that we shouldn't miss a thing. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, October 5th. This is ESPN Daily. Jeff, I was watching you watch baseball via Twitter on Sunday, and I was just consulting this chart that you had reposted, and it was color-coded. There were all these scenarios. It felt like something that was a mixture of the terror alert scale and also a very complicated management consulting firm spreadsheet.
That chart, by the way, came from a guy who slid into my DMs. I get all sorts of great stuff in my DMs.
Every episode, someone slides into Jeff Passan's DMs, and it's very creepy and then very productive journalistically.
Incredibly productive. And I was like, why did you do this? And he was like, I'm bored. That was just such a great answer. He said, I do this every year. It's like, wow, buddy, you're kind of awesome, but kind of scary too. And what ended up happening was about as chalky as you can get. We ended up with the Red Sox and the Yankees in the wild card game because they did what they had to do and they won. And both did it in pretty dramatic fashion, which made Sunday a little better if we weren't going to have chaos.
That part for me as Yankees homer guy was incredible.
2-2. Line drive. Here comes Wade. Here's the throw. He's safe. And the Yankees walk off into the postseason.
Watching that game, Aaron Judge, the hit right up the middle to get into the postseason, that to me was chef's kiss.
It was a really good game. And that was actually my favorite subplot, maybe of the entire weekend in the end. If we weren't going to have chaos, I at least wanted there to be some tea. And there is some really good tea sitting there right now, steeping in the Boston Red Sox clubhouse. On Saturday night, Major League Baseball went to the four American League teams that were still in the wild card race and essentially asked them, okay, if there are ties or if you end up here, What team do you want to be? What is your draft pick? And the top seed, Boston, said we will be Team A, which means we get a home game. The second seed, Toronto, said we will be Team C, which means we get a home game. The New York Yankees had the third pick. And they had their choice, Pablo, to play at Fenway Park against the Red Sox in the case of a four-way tie, or at Rogers Center against Toronto. And the Yankees wanted to play the Red Sox more than they did the Blue Jays, which tells you something about just how dangerous the Blue Jays were and how much they are lamenting having missed the postseason by one game, but also tells you something about what the Yankees think about the Boston Red Sox. They think that they are vulnerable. They think that they can beat them. They think they are going to walk out of Fenway Park as American League wild card champions.
Yeah, I love this. I love a blood feud getting even more tense and even more full of resentment. So just to set up the scene here tonight, Jeff, like I understand that we didn't get the full-blown chaos that you clearly were twitchingly hoping for, but what we get though, I mean, Yankees, Red Sox at Fenway, I mean, the history speaks for itself, right? I mean, from Bucky Dent to Aaron Boone to Who's Your Daddy to the 04 ALCS to Pedro throwing Don Zimmer onto the ground, like how do you think that atmosphere is going to feel through a TV screen tonight?
I hope it feels like one of those old school games. First off, we're going to have Gerrit Cole, the New York Yankees $324 million pitcher, on the mound in the sort of game that he was brought on to be the mercenary for. On the other side, we're going to have Nate Eovaldi, who has actually, by wins above replacement on Fangraphs, been the best pitcher in the American League this year, even better than Gerrit Cole. We're going to have the fact that this Red Sox team has clawed back from a couple of COVID outbreaks and from a bad 2020 season and is going to have its home crowd behind it. More than anything, what I'm hoping happens is that this one game wild card where you either win or go home restarts this era of Yankees Red Sox blood feud. Because honestly, it feels like Yankees Red Sox, Pablo, kind of played out.
It peaked. Really did peak when I was in college in the mid 2000s. Yeah. And it sort of petered out since that.
I want it to be what it once was. And I hate being the guy who's looking at the past and lamenting the present, because the present is still really good. I mean, the fact that we have two wild card series between four absolute jewel clubs in Major League Baseball sets up pretty nicely. Like, this is what the wild card round is supposed to be. It's supposed to be games that really matter, because if you don't win, then you go home and watch on TV. And nobody wants to be watching TV this early in October.
So the fact, Jeff, that these franchises historically, I mean, not just historically, actually, even this season, they seem like they not only know each other intimately, but they match up fairly evenly. They both finished with 92 wins. The regular season series was 10-9 in favor of Boston, which is why we're at Fenway in the first place. Which of these teams has a demonstrable edge to you?
Neither. You're right. They are very similar teams, actually, in that the most consistent thing about them has been their inconsistency. We've done the Yankees thing a couple times now, Pablo. We had the session where I tried to play Dr. Melfi to your Tony Soprano, and that frankly is all the Yankees needed to go and rip off a 13-game winning streak. But then there
God
are times
bless you
where,
for it. Yes,
yeah, there are times where they look like they couldn't beat a AAA team. It's a very confusing group, and the Red Sox are similar. You look at the Red Sox rotation, you look at the Red Sox bullpen, and you say, "How did this team win 92 games?" It's very confusing, and I just hope that we get the good versions of them today, because starting the playoffs off with Yankees and Red Sox, it's bound to turn off wide swaths of people who are just tired of hearing about the Yankees.
They're sick of me, Jeff. They're sick of us. Yes.
Let me say this, though, and I think this is a very important point to make. This was not a programming decision. This was not a choice made at ESPN, at Fox, or at TBS, or by a network television head. These two teams earned this spot. What I hope you get is that these are two very interesting, well-matched baseball teams that are going to be going head-to-head in a game that demands their managers manage with great amounts of urgency. And that's why I like the one-game wildcard format, because, listen, if you get down a run or two, the calculus completely changes. And if you get down three, you might be done. So you're doing everything you possibly can to ensure that that doesn't happen.
It all feels so delightfully absurd, Jeff, borderline irresponsible, mathematically even. But after the break, we need to head out to LA because that is where the Cardinals are doing everything they possibly can to ensure that the World Series favorites are done.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Jeff, it seems like you like the wildcard format. It seems like you like it because of all of the potential chaos, but really, at this point, the blood feud. But I wonder how the Dodgers feel about all of this because, man, they won 106 games. 106, and they did not win their division because they were a game shy of a Giants team that won 107, which none of us saw coming. I still don't have any explanation, really, as to how that specifically happened. So how should they feel about 162 being condensed into one possibly random turn of events here?
This is the problem with the wild card format, right? Like, if you had three games here, at least it would be a little more fair. At least it would be a little more representative.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose if we're looking historically, Pablo, the 2021 Los Angeles Dodgers should feel thankful they're not the 1993 San Francisco Giants, who, if you recall, won 103 games in the National League West, only to fall one short of the Atlanta Braves, who won 104.
Mm.
And that, to me, is the closest facsimile we have to this right here. The Dodgers are an absolute juggernaut. They did everything that they reasonably could do to have a great 2021 season. They went out in the offseason and they signed Trevor Bauer to follow up on their World Series championship in 2020. They lose Bauer, with Clayton Kershaw on the injured list as well, with Dustin May out because of Tommy John surgery. And at the trade deadline, they get the two best players available in Trey Turner and Max Scherzer. Scherzer is incredible. And Turner led baseball, all of baseball, in wins above replacement on Fangraphs this year. So he has been incredible too. They, down the stretch, were winning at about a 75% clip and barely gained on the Giants. And I think that there is understandable frustration inside of the Dodgers clubhouse and organization. Like, what can we do? I mean, the Giants, all they do is lead to questions about why they sustained this for as long as they did.
Yes.
And more than that, about what they're going to be in October. But in order to find that out, the Dodgers can't rest on their laurels, on their run differential, on their regular season wins. They need to go out and beat a St. Louis Cardinals team that just finished up a 17-game winning streak.
What a nightmare, man. Like, the idea of facing the Cardinals in one game that will negate so many months of just meticulous team management and talent acquisition and efficiency. The idea that that is how this might end in a flash. I mean, how do you describe what the Dodgers need to do against this particular Cardinals team, which really has felt omnipotent in ways that not even the Dodgers have?
Well, first off, they need to pitch well. And Max Scherzer, for all of his greatness, has in the past been prone to giving up early home runs. So I think avoiding an early home run for Max Scherzer is paramount in this situation. They also have to be patient because Adam Wainwright is on the mound. And as old and as wizened as Max Scherzer is, Adam Wainwright is even grayer, is even longer in the tooth. I mean, this matchup is going to be a combined 77 years old. It's like you know, every time when I was growing up, I would always listen to the combined weights of tag teams in the then WWF. And whenever a tag team was more than 550 pounds, I was like, wow, these are big guys, like Demolition.
This is the Dudley Boys of starting pitcher confrontations.
This is like Yokozuna and Rikishi if they teamed up.
Well, when you bring up Scherzer and Wainwright, Jeff, it brings to mind the other wizened participants in this game, and Yadier Molina and Albert Pujols, and it all feels like we've dug up this time capsule here. How do you see all this history playing out?
It does. And beyond that, this is a matchup between two pretty historic franchises. And by historic, I mean both in terms of their success and their history against one another. It's interesting that Clayton Kershaw goes down in all likelihood for the rest of the season with an elbow injury as the Dodgers prepare to face the Cardinals, who have been his nemesis and his kryptonite in the postseason in past years. The Dodgers, in all the runs that they've had recently and finally getting to a championship, have had years ended by the Cardinals. And this is one of those where even though the turnover on the Dodgers team has been great, there's still this feeling internally that beating the Cardinals is something that they really, really need to do and have to do in order to exercise some past demons.
So in terms of what baseball is getting here, Jeff, because we've talked about the substance of it baseball-wise, but in terms of the content of it for cynical sports gas bags like myself, does this feel like a success in terms of the Major League Baseball wildcard experiment? Does it all feel like kind of what they were hoping for?
Yeah, I think that, and remember, the wild card's been around for 25 years now. Like, this is not something that's new. The second wild card has been more recently adopted. But the idea that the one-and-done plan is something that works, it's polarizing, and understandably so. And we're entering, Pablo, I know I have a tendency to bring this up, and it makes me sound like such a Debbie Downer.
Jeff, go for it, man. Whatever you're about to do, just go for it.
The collective bargaining agreement is up on December 1st. Oh. And in that new collective bargaining agreement, there's an anticipation that there's going to be a new playoff format as well. Major League Baseball wants to expand the playoffs.
Yep.
They expanded the playoffs last year, remember, during the wacky COVID season where 8 teams got in each league. And they tried to expand the playoffs this year before the season as part of another COVID plan that would have shortened the season. They want to expand playoffs. And the Major League Baseball Players Association understands that this is a chip that's going to cost MLB something. The question is MLB willing to fight for expanded playoffs hard enough that could be something that ends up leading to a labor stoppage. I don't think so necessarily, but combined with all of the myriad other issues that are still in play between the sides, I do think there's probably going to be a labor stoppage this offseason, which is not inherently a bad thing unless, you know, it spills over into February or March. Let's put it this way. October has started. The playoffs are beginning this week with the New York Yankees against the Boston Red Sox at Fenway Park and the St. Louis Cardinals against the Los Angeles Dodgers at Dodger Stadium. After that, the winners in the AL are going to face a 100-win Tampa Bay Rays team. And the winners in the NL are going to face a 107-win San Francisco Giants team. The Chicago White Sox, who have been fantastic all year, are going to Houston to play an Astros team that has been equally as good, if not slightly better. And an Atlanta Braves team that overcame Ronald Acuna's injury are going to be going to Milwaukee to face a Brewers team that might be as dangerous as any out there. Enjoy this postseason. Enjoy it because there's going to be a lot of conversations starting in November about what baseball doesn't have. And that's a labor agreement going forward. And it has a chance to be a very dark winter. So let's hope, Pablo, that at the beginning of October, here on October 5th, the day that the wild card begins, that we can have a very sunny, enjoyable, and chaotic October.
So basically what you're saying is, much like your vision, we should all enjoy this while it lasts.
That's exactly what I'm saying, you animal.
Jeff Passan, thank you for being our ideal tag team partner.
At a combined weight, what do you weigh?
Oh, I'm like at 165 these days.
At a combined weight of 340 pounds. What's our tag team name, Pablo?
The unrepentant gas bags.
The unrepentant gas bags.
I'm just freestyling now. Music.
Is that our music? Is this our
Jeff Passan, I assume they're going to find great music to make this actually sound like I know what I'm doing. And so thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Pablo.
All right, after the break, Jeremy Schapp invites us into his time machine. And he takes us back to one of the most infamous moments in Yankees Red Sox history.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. When the Red Sox host the Yankees today in this wild card game, it's going to be the first time in more than 40 years that the most storied rivals in baseball have met in a one-game series, win or go home. The last time came in 1978, when the two teams met for a tiebreaker game with the division on the line. And this relatively anonymous Yankees shortstop, batting ninth in their lineup, stepped up to the plate.
Deep to left. Yastrzemski will not get it. It's home run. Yankees now lead 3-2.
And then wound up crossing home with a new name altogether. Bucky Bleeping Dent. And one of our friends just so happened to be there in the middle of all of it. Jeremy Schapp, tell me about October 2nd, 1978.
Well, October 2nd, 1978, Pablo, of course, is one of those dates that stands in the annals of baseball as unforgettable. Something most people in the game remember vividly.
Good afternoon, everybody. On a beautiful, beautiful fall day here in Fenway Park, a one-game playoff to decide the American League Eastern Division champion.
They remember where they were. They remember what the stakes were. And, of course, they remember the climactic moments of the one-game playoff that took place on October 1978 in the early fall sunshine at Fenway Park, the Yankees versus the Red Sox. The previous day, they had ended what had appeared to be the final game of the regular season for both of them with 99 wins and 63 losses as the Yankees mounted one of the great comebacks in pennant history, having been 14 games down as late as July 20th, I think.
Jeremy, you've entered a fugue state just rattling off historical facts. What I want to know most of all, though, is where were you?
Where was I? Well, do you want the long version or the short version, Pablo? Because I can get a little poetic.
It feels like I never have a choice when you ask that, but I'm going to vote for the short version.
The short version of the story is this. That morning, my father, Dick Schaap, who was the sports correspondent for NBC News, he decided that we would go together to the game. We lived in New York City. We would go together to the game at Fenway. I was 9 years old. I was a totally obsessive, crazy baseball fan in general, and specifically a fan of the New York Yankees. So he said we would go to the game that day up in Boston, and it was a remarkable treat. I think I should know this, Pablo, but I think it was Rosh Hashanah, and we were definitely not in Temple. We were in a temple of baseball.
That's right. We were in a religious experience of it was a profound different kind.
So we get to Fenway, and you know, as I recall, it's Yankees batting practice. That's, you know, the picture in my mind's eye. And at that point, I'd been to many games that year with my father, so he could sneak me into the press box typically. I remember being in the press box already, I think, a couple times that year up at Fenway. But this was different. This was a one-game playoff. There was not going to be any room, even for a baseball junkie 9-year-old in the press box. So he realized he didn't have a ticket. There was nowhere for us to sit together and watch the game. So as you would in those days, he asked a few of the Yankees who were hanging out of the batting cage, hey, does anybody have any spare tickets for today? And in fact, one of the players offered his, and I like to put it this way, these precise words, Pablo, which remind me of the way my father would say it, one Russell Bucky Dent gave us his seats.
So hold on.
And I've been eating out on that for a long time.
Jeremy, I want to gorge on all of this as well. So did you know Bucky Dent at all? Did you know him?
Did I know Bucky Dent? I mean, he was the shortstop for the New York Yankees. Everybody knew him, Pablo. No, personally, no. We had no previous relationship. And I don't think my father did either.
So wait, Jeremy, so you're sitting in Bucky Dent's seats when...
I swear it's true. When it happens.
When it happens. So what do you remember about it happening in the seventh inning?
This is what I remember.
The count's 1-1. Two outs and two on. The Red Sox lead at 2-0 in the seventh inning here at Fenway.
I don't remember anything from earlier in the game. I don't remember Yastrzemski hitting the home run in the second. I don't remember... I think it was Rice driving in Burleson to make it 2-0 in the sixth. And then in the top of the seventh, what I do remember is the ball in flight.
Deep to left. Yastrzemski will not get it. It's all right.
Okay. And I remember from where we were sitting in left field stands area that it was hard for me to perceive from that angle whether the ball would be foul or fair. And so in this moment, when the ball actually clears the Green Monster, and I'm expecting to know whether it's foul or fair based on the reaction of the crowd, it's not the reaction I would expect. I remember this as 9-year-old. I remember like, oh, they're not cheering. It must be a foul ball, which of course is the exact opposite of what it would be because I'm you know, I didn't say I was the brightest 9-year-old. And
you did
so
not.
I'm thinking like, right. So I'm thinking at this moment, oh, it's, and then I realize, oh, and now I'm jumping up and down.
A 3-run home run for Bucky Dent. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
I can only imagine how furious the people around you, if they had caught a glimpse of this 9-year-old processing this like 5 beats slower than everybody else. How mad they must have been in response to that.
Well, my father pretty quickly told me to calm down. You know, I was 9, but I was still celebrating Bucky Dent's home run in the face of all these Red Sox fans. This is not Boston now, where they win the World Series more often than the Yankees. This is 1978 Boston. They have not won a World Series at that point in 60 years. They have won 3 pennants since January 5th, 1920, the infamous, notorious date on which Harry Frazee sold Babe Ruth to the Yankees. In that span, the Red Sox have won 3 pennants and no World Series. The Yankees have won 31 pennants and 21 World Series. So no, celebrating Bucky Dent's home run, probably not the smartest thing to do.
But Jeremy, give us the context here, because Bucky Dent wasn't known as the guy who would do a thing like this.
Well, the last guy on the ball club you'd expect to hit a home run just hit one into the screen. Bucky Dent.
No, it's amazing. Bucky Dent, going into that at bat, was hitting .241. Mm. For the season, he had hit 4 home runs. There were very few people, regulars in baseball, who were less likely not only, you know, to hit a home run, but much less to get an extra base hit, which is what the Yankees needed.
So did you realize, Jeremy, that you were sitting in the seats of one Russell Bucky Dent? When did that set in, that you were actually in, you were where his family would have been, ostensibly?
I'd like to think that it registered fairly quickly, but again, I didn't say I was the smartest 9-year-old. I know that within hours it became part of family lore, something that, you know, we talked about and have talked about over the years. I saved the ticket stub for a long time. I had it in a scrapbook. It was just this little stub. It was like 1.5 by 1.5 inches. And I had it glued into this book with all the other memorabilia. And my mother, she threw it away. I forgave her, mostly.
But the question I have for you at the end here, Jeremy, is because Bucky Dent has become...
The end. We're at the end already? I'm just getting warmed up.
But Bucky Dent, man, he's a curse word now. He's a name that cannot be spoken without an expletive attached. And I wonder if you feel like, by virtue of your position in all of this, do you feel like you deserve to share in some amount of that infamy?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, I mean, I've been trying, you know, for 43 years to attach myself whenever possible to this moment. So I hope it's had some impact, that my efforts have not been for naught. You know, it's a great story, right, Pablo? And I was the luckiest kid in the world. I'd been to the Reggie Jackson home run 11 months earlier. I was at the Dent game on October 2nd, 78. 8 years later, I would be at the Buckner game at Shea Stadium. Mm. And then 17 years after that, I would be at the Bartman game at Wrigley. So maybe four of the 5 or 6 kind of most famous games in baseball in the last half century. And I was at all 4 of them, 3 different cities, 4 different ballparks, all of them as a fan, not working at any of them.
What you're saying, Jeremy, is that wherever Jeremy Schapp goes, lots of people are about to be infuriated.
That's exactly it. You've nailed it. You've nailed it.
Jeremy Bleeping Schapp, thanks for taking us back in time.
Thanks, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.